Welcome to WKXL in the morning at 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, 101.9 FM Manchester, and nhtalkradio.com. I'm your host, AJ Kierstead. It's time for a New Hampshire Business Update with Jeff Feingold, editor of New Hampshire Business Review. More from them at nhbr.com. Jeff is laughing at me currently as I proceed to do my next interview with him instead.
Just chuckling.
What am I doing? Thursday nights are a disaster for AJ. So it's definitely been a busy week when it comes to business news. The highlight definitely is the infrastructure package was finally passed Congress and signed by President Biden on Monday. And he actually came to New Hampshire earlier on in the week to sell it in front of a busted old bridge.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have to say something that's like a symbol to me of how much New Hampshire's infrastructure is really needs as much help as it can get. And this is going to be a big shot in the arm, so to speak, with this stuff. And, you know, I think that no matter what your politics are, I think you should understand that this is a necessary thing for New Hampshire, and I'm sure of other states as well. But just the transportation infrastructure alone, but other things are going to be even more important, really, in the end. But there's over 200, 300 red list bridges.
Yeah.
Which are just, that's really just frightening. And you know, it brings me back remembering many years ago in the Merrill administration in the early 90s, the then transportation secretary was asked, what do you do about these red list, you know, if you're on one of these red list bridges? And because the state was having a major budget crisis and all that other stuff. And he said, don't look back, just keep going.
And that's just ignore those screws, those bolts falling out.
And we've been dealing. I mean, you know, that's, you know, we don't have all as many, you know, with this infrastructure bill, we might have some alternatives that'll be viable in the future. But right now, we don't have alternatives to roads, to our highways and bridges. And you know, we got to make sure they're in good shape, because that's how all commerce flows.
Exactly. I mean, that it's very important, especially in New England. Grew up in Maine, longtime New Hampshire resident. Now it's over on the other side of Concord. There was a bridge over by the Concord Monitor offices. There was a single lane, looked horrible forever. And these projects take a very long time.
Yes, they do.
Like that road was basically out of order for about a year. So anyone that works at the Monitor or lives over by Beaver Meadow Golf Course had to take Fisherville Road, which is tax on a half hour around.
You can't get there from here. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. You can't get to the highway. So it greatly slows down the ability of people to live in certain areas, get to work, and if you live in certain areas. And big thing we've been talking about recently is the supply chain shortage. If these trucks already have a hard enough time getting to where they're going, if then they have to fight traffic like this, they may not want to deliver to certain areas anymore.
Well, you know, in the long run, really, you need this. We need this transportation network because New Hampshire is pretty rapidly becoming a major hub for logistics centers because of the locations. We're having these very, very big warehouses and other logistics centers like Amazon, and Walmart has one, but there's many, many others. I don't think a week goes by when there's not a big, almost 500,000 square feet of warehouse and store space that's being sold and developed.
It's central for Maine and Vermont, and
it's northern New England. For northern New England, exactly, and also northern New Hampshire and northern Massachusetts. And this is why our roads are so important. And you know, the state, you know, with our limited resources, and I don't want to get a discussion about if it's limited by our own choice, but that's what we have. We have limited resources, and you know, we can't do the things we want to do. It's like, you know, the widening of I-93 has taken, what, a generation or two?
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, and 101 the same way. That took a very long time. And these are the things that we need to remember. And this money should go a long way to helping get us on the right track. That's a separate fund for the commuter rail, but that's another matter.
What else out of that package do you think is really going to be impactful to New Hampshire?
Oh, I absolutely. The top of my list is broadband.
Yeah.
It's about $100 million that'll help expand broadband. No, actually not expand broadband. I shouldn't say expand. It's going to bring broadband to large parts of the state that do not currently have that kind of access. and we've talked about this on your show before. It's like this is essential for any economy, any business in the future, and individuals. In turn, and it will help New Hampshire. Like we're talking about rural areas, we're talking about Northern New Hampshire, Coos County, Grafton, Carroll, but also Cheshire County, Sullivan County. They've also been kind of broadband deserts, and this will help really bring them up to speed. And it's also no pun intended, but really on this stuff. And it's a necessary thing. It's like, it is at this point, like having telephone service or electrical service. It really is. It's not, there's no way you can expect to be a survivor in the economy. And we're talking about the world economy now. We're not just talking about the New Hampshire or US economy without an essential broadband kind of service.
There's little aspects to it that people don't consider. I mean, even just like a cash register nowadays. I mean, anytime you see like an old school, like the little machine where to get the credit card reader to go in, it's painful now because like, oh, I can't just use Apple Pay on it. I can't use the touch on RFID on the card in order to pay for it. So and then they deal with customers that just say, screw it, I'm going to spend 10 minutes waiting for my card to go through before I go there because no one carries cash anymore.
No, that's a very good point. And the other thing is that what we're seeing is that it also might be a really, this is just a guess on my part, or maybe a wish, that if with reliable, ample broadband connections, those were more remote communities, rural communities are really attractive places. I know I lived in Keene. And it's a beautiful city, and it's a great area, the Hominadnock region. Same is true of the North Country. And people could actually locate there, live there, and work because so many people are working remotely. And that would be a major thing in terms of bringing in more people into the state, especially in states that are less populated that have lost a lot of population. I'm thinking of Coos County, which has lost pretty much every young person. I'm exaggerating, but you know what I mean? It's just bleeding young people. And this is a way to bring more people into the state to live, which is what we need for the workforce.
Yeah, the old lumber jobs and such, and the paper mills and such, they're gone and they're not coming back. There's some high-end like Amazon warehouses coming in and such, which are good for a selection of people, but that's not a career for most people.
But that's also not happening up in the North Country because they don't have the same thing. And the other thing about it is, you know, when I first moved to this state, we did a list of the biggest employers in the state, manufacturing employers. And I remember this is in 1984, still the biggest employer was James River Corporation, which owned the mill up in Berwyn.
Yeah.
That was 5,000-6,000 jobs. And within a couple of years, those jobs were gone. And the major manufacturing employers became what was then Sanders Associates. It became Digital Equipment. And then they were succeeded by Cabletron and these other BAE systems. But now our economy is not like that anymore. Right. The biggest employer in the state by far is private employer is Dartmouth Hitchcock, over 10,000 employees. And they, fortunately, I say fortunately because they replaced Walmart, which for years was the biggest employer.
I know.
At least we know the jobs are a little bit more,
More sustainable long term.
Yeah, more sustainable.
And added advantages is with the expansion of broadband, more than just for the general workers, is also the back end infrastructure jobs that'll be created from, like, for example, there's an article on NHBR.com where Consolidate is launching a new sub brand for their fiber called Fidium Fiber.
Yes.
And that's going to entail a ton of workers laying the groundwork for those people that manage the servers for the data centers that can utilize this fiber. Mm-hmm. And it's huge.
But the thing is that they're bringing it out, rolling out to 80 communities in New Hampshire. And this is the part that why it's essential to help the more rural areas, because they're going to be in Manchester, Concord, all of the major cities. It's going to be in the larger communities that already have access. This is a beneficial for the people in the cities like Manchester, where I am. You know, right now your only access in most cases for fiber is going to be Xfinity, is going to be Comcast. This will be a competition, which is good for consumers. But they're not having that conversation up in the North Country.
No,
they wish they had some monopoly at this point. But this is why it's important that for to just at level the playing field.
Yeah, and it gives them more business that to really entice them for those to improve in those larger city centers. Also, I mean, yes. Downtown Concord, I can get crappy DSL from Consolidated, or I can get Comcast, which is pretty expensive for the service you get, especially for those upload speeds.
Yeah, you know, another thing that's really going to be helpful. In terms of at least a short-term shot in the arm, but actually I can argue it's a longer term, is that there's over $400 million coming to address water infrastructure in New Hampshire. And that's like replacing older pipes and dealing with delivery systems that are, you know, old, you know, in the cities. And that's going to be, that's also, you know, we're talking about all these jobs being created. We have the people who work the jobs, but those are going to be some really good jobs, you know, working on that kind of stuff, construction jobs and other things, engineering and all those things that are required for that. So that's going to be another major thing. There's no way that this bill is the whole thing, you know, the $1 trillion worth is not going to be a major shot in the arm for the economy. I think that's what's concerning some people watching for inflation. But, you know, you can worry about inflation at one point, but you know, you want people working, yeah, having money in their pockets. And I say, like, it takes a step at a time, because a lot of these things are really necessary. We can't keep putting them off because the price tag gets bigger and bigger to take care of.
So another thing that was in NHBR.com is a discussion. You had actually had a podcast on the
insurance. We actually have a story, and it's in our new issue that came out today.
Oh, awesome.
It's a digital issue, yeah.
Yeah, on the insurance marketplace being a viable option for more people, yes, is they're finding as they search around. What's going on with that?
Yeah, what's happened is that, you know, classically, you know, historically, it's always been that you would get your health insurance. Almost everybody got their health insurance through their employer. And that's pretty much true in New Hampshire, because large employers, what, you know, they call large groups, they still insure a bulk, the majority of New Hampshire workers. But small groups, the small businesses, smaller businesses, they have different rates they have to pay and different coverage that they can offer. And what we've seen is that over the years, with the ACA and with the different subsidies to go on the exchange, more people are opting for that with the support of their employers to just go on the exchange, get you, you know, we'll give you some money, go on the exchange and do this, you know, that kind of stuff. And so what the result has been, that because of that, this is a trend that's been going on for years and is continuing, is that the price of small group insurance, which always used to be cheaper when the premiums for the employee were always lower than it was for individual policies before the exchange. And even when the beginning of the exchange, they were still much higher than small group. They are now, with the subsidies, which go up, you know, they're available for people, you know, with families of four, I think with well over $100,000 right now, they get a certain level of subsidies. It's cheaper to do that than to for the premiums, or it's a little bit more expensive, but it's almost equal.
Yeah.
As it is for to buy, get small group. So the result is that it's been tens of thousands of people who used to get small group insurance are not getting it anymore. And small employers the result is that their prices are going up. So the competition becomes even more difficult. And also the other thing that's interesting is that, you know, the average premium in New Hampshire is relatively, it's not great, but it's not the worst. But New Hampshire has among the highest deductibles on these small group insurances. You know, we're talking about an average deductible of $3,700.
Wow.
Out of pocket. Many employers have a savings accounts, health savings accounts, mm-hmm, that help employees pay for that deductible. But it's still really high. And that's another
crazy
thing.
Confusing. I mean, it makes people just not use it. I used to be on a plan like that when at my full-time employment, and when I first got started, I ended up paying a ton of money out of pocket. Yeah. I didn't even realize, I have access to this money. I don't understand how I use it. I got to front it sometimes, depending on how it works.
It's not a preferable way for a lot of people. And not that there's deductibles on the ACA, the Affordable Care Act exchange, but they're also subsidized for most, right, for many people. So, you know, in the end, there's more people going to individual insurance and more employers getting out of the insurance business, which, you know, is not such a terrible thing, but we're in this state of flux right now.
Yeah, from a political perspective, if we have to take a path towards single payer in some fashion, I have to say this is kind of the way to do it.
This is probably the way where it's headed. And, you know, it's, you know, that's a long way to go, but
yeah, there's which still, you're fine with. I want them to take their damn time because I don't want them to screw it up just like they do so many other government programs.
No, it's true. Yeah. But what we're seeing is that, and also, you know, there's a benefits of having individual insurance like this is that people have more mobility. They don't have to stay with an employer just because, right, they want the insurance. And that happens to a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. Especially if you have a family. I mean, I couldn't imagine not having life insurance or health insurance for my wife and kid.
Exactly.
I'm a single income family here, and I don't want to risk something happen with that.
That
would be something I would seriously consider if I was to change careers.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, and also, it's not even just changing careers, changing jobs, but also like if you have an idea to start a business.
Yeah, totally.
And you say, well, I can't do it. I can't leave my job because I can't start the business because I can't afford to lose the health insurance. But if you have an option of getting health insurance someplace else, it's much more likely that you'll say, you know, I'm going to take a chance on this. So it's really an interesting trend that we're seeing. You know, it's not the end of small employers, you know, smaller employers offering insurance to their employees, because there's also the matter of competing for a workforce. But I'm betting that over, you know, the next 10 years or so, we'll see different kinds of benefits being offered instead of health insurance or other things. You know, they'll be paying for that, but health insurance will be part of, it's not going to be necessarily, they'll say, here's some money to buy health insurance and good luck, go find something that you like.
Yeah. And there's been such push over the last few years for FMLA to be covered by these small businesses that can't afford it and all these other things. If these politicians and policymakers really want to have it happen, there needs to be an option that's taken care of on the government end of things, because they're just not going to be able to fund it individually.
Oh, that's what they want to have in the second bill that the president's, you know, has to build back better. It has had some kind of paid family leave. It's got a government involvement with it, but I guess Senator Manchin's against it. So, as we know, that's the vote that counts.
Exactly.
Unfortunately,
Manchin,
I think she supports it. Actually,
okay.
I get confused because I think she supports it, but he doesn't. And it's very frustrating reading this stuff. You know?
It's been so confusing for me as someone who doesn't understand the federal budget stuff. I had Bob Bixby from the Concord Coalition on
explain some
of it to me. It's on the New England Take podcast feed, so I can understand what the heck they're talking about. And I kind of understand now a bit, but it's really when you get these three tremendous bills that cost just trillions upon trillions of dollars, you kind of just gloss over going, what is this supposed to do? Because a lot of the payments for these services would be coming in 8 years, so they can monkey around with how it would be paid for.
Well, I have to say this, in terms of, you know, the $1 trillion of these, the $1 trillion price tags of these things, something that I always like to put in perspective is the special inspector general who looked over the Afghanistan and Iraq project, I'll call it. He had a thing in his review that basically over $6 trillion was spent on those two wars.
Yeah.
That's
easily
a lot of money. And then you could say, well, where did that money go?
Yeah.
At least with this, you say, well, I can see this bridge is going to get fixed, you know? There's something we have to put in perspective, how, you know, we look closely at, and we should look closely at all these bills. We never had a chance to look closely at those two wars and the trillions of dollars that went into that.
Yeah, that's been my whole, I'm not necessarily an isolationist, but if I would love to have better social safety net programs in this country, and that's being in those endless conflicts over there where we had just a tremendous amount of economic or financial impact to make happen, it just didn't make sense to me.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
All right. Jeff Feingold, New Hampshire Business Review. Thanks for joining me.
Take care. It's good talking with you.
Be sure to get more of them at nhbr.com. You're listening to WKXL in the morning on 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, 101.9 FM Manchester, and nhtalkradio.com.